And we do return. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper with you. Bonnie Berman will return with us Monday. And we echo those sentiments about supporting the regional and local programming on the station. Today's very important. It's the last day of the drive. Give us a call at 1-866-247-9576 or go online at WLRNradio.org and make your pledge during Topical Currents. Well, it's our food and dining extravaganza Thursday. Joining me now is my friend, chef, author, and syndicated columnist, Linda Gastenheimer. And today we have one of the most recognizable names in South Florida food and dining, as well as internationally, the James Beard Award winner, longtime star of the scene, and he has a new book out. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Getting close to the holidays.
Yes. So who is he?
Well, it's up to you.
All right.
You're the star here.
Okay, there's two stars here then, I guess. Joe, Key West. It's hard to believe that at one time it was a bigger city than Miami. In mm-hmm. fact, it was almost a suburb of Havana. And our guest here is here to give us the Key West scoop, and he is Chef Norman Van Aken. Now, before he was a star in Miami, he started his career in Key West, and his latest book is written with his son, Justin, and it's called My Key West Kitchen. So welcome, Norman Van Aken.
Well, thank you, Linda. Thank you, Joseph.
I'm sure there's some great stories in that book.
I'm
and it
sure.
didn't make the book, too.
Well, let's hear if we can find out what they are. And we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any special memories of Key West or maybe some questions for Chef Norman Van Aken? Give us a call with your questions or suggestions. That's 305-743-9576.
Not to be confused with the pledge line, though.
Yes, that's why I hesitated. I wanted to make sure they got it straight.
To call in, it's 1-800-743-WLRN, 1-800-743-9576.
Can we use email today?
No.
No email today. So just give us a call. And, of course, our favorite wine guy is here with us today, Fred Tasker. You can read Fred's column in today's Miami Herald, and he's joining us by Skype. Fred, what are we drinking today? Apparently,
Hello,
Skype
Fred.
Is not there.
I guess there's some problem up in Michigan.
I think it's ice wine.
With Fred.
So maybe...
We'll just proceed.
We'll just continue.
And our technicians will work on it.
We'll work on getting Fred. Fred, we'll get you on here soon. okay, let's go to Chef Norman Van Aken. Congratulations first on My Key West Kitchen.
Thank you very much.
So, Norman, you and I first met, it was maybe in the 80s, the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You were working at Louis Backyard in Key West, and I was working on my first book about the Keys cuisine.
That's funny, because that's where I wrote my first book, too.
And we had the same agent.
Yeah, we did?
Yes, we did.
Oh, my gosh. There's a small world here.
Very small. And now your new book has my publisher, Kyle Cathey.
We share that, too.
Well, that's all we share, okay?
Okay. Well, this radio show.
Exactly. All right. So let's talk about, what was Key West like then?
Well, I got to Key West in 1971 for the very first time, and it was an unknown place to me. Before that, probably a geography lesson in fifth grade maybe is the closest I got to it. But I was sick and tired of winter. I was going to college, but begrudgingly. And in March of that year, I went down to Champaign-Urbana where some friends were having a party. And I said, hey, where's Steve? And Steve is my best friend's older brother. And they said, he went to Key West. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. Anybody else want to go? And two brothers said, yeah, we'll go. And we jumped in a van, and 36 hours later, we were there. And it was like going to heaven or something for me. I was so
And you came
ready.
Down from where? From
I come down Urbana. From... I was living in northern Illinois near the Wisconsin border, which is where I was born and raised in that area. But my mother and father did bring us down to Miami Beach when I was a baby and a very young child. And so I had the early imprint of Palm Beach, of palms and beaches and things like that. But never had I been to the Keys. And my first impressions were from that very first night of being in that van and going down those little bridges, I mean, which are smaller then. And there were no street lamps, and it was just really the stars in the sky and the ocean around us and smelling the seawater, and then long, long, long voyage down the Keys back then, 5 or 6 hours in that van, and then coming into the island of Key West and having some almost like mystical feeling like this is where I was supposed to be.
So, now, what was the food like there then?
The food was...
Different from today?
Oh, I think so. But I was also so young that I was different. And I was not a chef. I was not in training to be a cook, much less a chef. So my first impressions were that I was in a different country. We went to a Cuban restaurant once or twice in that first month I was there. And I had arroz con pollo and I had paella. And I felt like, wow, this is an adventure. But I got back in 72 for a visit. And then in 1973 was when I started living in Key West and working in Key West as a cook.
As a cook. I think we have Fred with us now.
I think we do.
Am I here?
Oh, you're here, Fred. Hi.
Hi, Norman. Good to have you here.
Well, you moved back up where we came from pretty much, didn't you, Fred?
Yeah, I'm up in the snow country now. Well, I thought I would talk about seasonal Christmas beers.
Nice. We're ready.
Beers? Fred?
Beers.
The wine guy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I've become a beer guy up here in Michigan. They make some good beer.
Oh, Fred, we've lost him.
My son would be thrilled, Fred.
Good to hear it.
Okay, well, Norman's been telling us what the Keys were like when how he first got to the Keys and what it was like in Key West at that time. Norman, I think, is one of the chefs who didn't go to culinary school. You're self-trained. And who were you working with there? Who did you learn from?
Well, I learned from people like Budman, Black Betty, Bicycle Sammy, the kind of people that you would meet in Key West back then. And so...
Well, what did you learn from them?
I learned how to cook. I learned how to, you know, truss a chicken or saute a yellowtail or cut fish outside on a board that was not really even a cutting board. It was like a door that was hung off of chains. Philip Messia was my first chef who really showed me a lot, and he was an Italian guy from Philly, and he'd gone to school. I started to run into people that had graduated from places like the CIA around 1978 and 79, first at the Pier House, which is still there and thriving, and then the much smaller, but I think even more focused Port of Call restaurant, which is the first place I thought be a chef, because I had been a cook for 6 or 7 years, but no one thought about it as being this massively creative thing to do. And thank God that I got to Key West, because it gave me my palate.
And then you ended up at Louis' Backyard, which is still considered.
Oh, what a place.
Yes. I had an interlude, though. Our son was born in 1980. My co-author, we'll come back to that, was born in 1980. And Janet, his mother, my wife, got homesick, and so we went back to Illinois to live, and I worked for a gentleman there named Marshall Field, whose family created those department stores, and also things like the Chicago Tribune that he owned, the Sun-Times that he owned, excuse me. And a young man named Charlie Trotter was my busboy in our restaurant and became a cook with me. Well, I was the chef by then.
And he wrote a wonderful forward.
That was a beautiful thing. Yes. He's a beautiful, beautiful person, and one of the closest people I've ever had in my life, and used to babysit Justin back in the day too. But I had this interlude, and then I got back to Key West and took over Louis' Backyard in 1985, and that was another leap to hyperspace, an acceleration in my career, and it was where I really began to understand my role as an author.
Well, and then you progressed from there. Mm. Well, we're talking with Norman Van Aken, and his latest book is My Key West Kitchen, and he wrote it with his son, Justin Van Aken. We just have like a half a minute left.
Yeah.
Right, so why did you decide to write the book with Justin?
Well, I think a father wants to give his son something to as a legacy, and I think this was my legacy for him to hopefully enjoy writing the way I have, and I think he will.
Okay. Well, on that note, I'm Linda Gassenheimer. We're talking with Chef Norman Van Aken, and we'll take a short break here. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Norman Van Aken. His latest book is My Key West Kitchen, and he wrote it with his son, Justin Van Aken. He's been telling us about his journey from a chef in Key West, and now we're going to find out how he became a megastar in Miami. And we want to have his favorite Key West stories. So first of all, I want to have the stories, Norman Van Aken. What are some of your favorite Key West stories?
Oh, man, there's so many. I mean, the title of our book is My Key West Kitchen, Recipes and Stories. And so if you like stories, just read this book.
Let's have one or two.
Well,
what about the one from the Bordello?
The Bordello. I didn't need that. That one's going to be in the memoir, not in the cookbook. Sorry, Joseph. You know, the people that you learned from, there was just an amazing character, cast of characters that I learned from, and I touched on the name of one of them just a minute ago, Bicycle Sammy. Bicycle Sammy was not a name I made up. It was what everybody in town called him. He was a former Navy guy who had a bicycle that had horns and whistles and lights and a gigantic basket. He could fit a whole case of shrimp in that basket, and he would come whistling into work at 6:30 in the morning, and I'd be finishing the graveyard shift when he would show up. And Bicycle Sammy, he didn't have a chef outfit, but he did have starched white clothes that he got somewhere, and so he made it work for himself. But he taught me the language of the kitchen, you know, like salt and pepper were Ike and Mike, and a hot dog was Bun Pup, and there was corned beef and hash was called Gentlemen Will Take a Chance. And so all kinds of...
Where was this? Where were you?
That was at the Midget, which was an all-night barbecue place, no longer there. And I worked there for about 6 months, and it was the second time I'd cooked for a living. And Bud Mann was the guy that ran the place, and I said, Bud, I don't know how to cook things like meat and barbecue when I first started. And he goes, don't worry, kid. You're working the midnight shift. Those guys are going to be so buzzed they won't care what you cook them.
So that's how you started to learn how to cook.
Yeah, I didn't think I was going to be a cook or a chef or anything like that. My interests were really more in writing and being in a band and trying to figure out a way to make a living like that, because where I came from, people were carpenters and house painters and plumbers and maybe school teachers if they were really up there, but people didn't talk about being chefs. And so it was just not in my vocabulary. Although my first job cooking in a diner, I loved it. I loved the pace. I loved the smell of the food, the language of it. I loved the waitresses. I married one of them.
And so now in your book, My Key West Kitchen, you talk people. I think people understand Key West is a little tiny island, but yet there are so many different regions there and hoods. So tell us about the hoods.
Well, that's a great question, Linda. And we began writing the book and sort of following the idea of soup, salads, entrees, desserts, things like that. And then Justin was looking at a map in our home in Key West. We still have a home in Key West. And he went, Dad, what if we organize the book around the neighborhoods of Key West? Because that's how you really experience the town. And I was a little shook up because we were on a pretty tight deadline for this book, but he made perfect sense. And so we organized the book in that fashion. We have on the water, the kinds of foods that you'd think of when you're on the water, like something like, you know, beer steamed shrimp or something. We have the chapter that you alluded to, places in the hood, and those are the kind of familial neighborhood places where you'd go to El Siboney restaurant and have their amazing pork chops with black beans and yellow rice, or you'd go to Five Brothers, a little grocery store that's
an amazing little store. I can't believe it's still there, and it's a little tiny. It's actually in residential area.
Yeah, it's a frisbee throw from the graveyard, and it's you can hear the chickens squawking around there. And you go in, and you know, some people are buying a pound of coffee, but many people are buying their egg sandwiches or their famous boyos, which are an addictive treasure, something like conch fritters, but made from black-eyed peas. So they're unique.
You used to be able to go in there and just buy the mixture and make them fresh at home.
Yes, that's true. You might be able to do that. I don't know. But we just have them make them, and they're just a little bit of hot sauce. And then you sit outside on a bench and maybe have a cafe con leche. And you are definitely experiencing the kind of Key West that was there 40 years ago when I first got to town. What we wanted to do with this book, Linda, was we wanted to show people what a diverse and dynamic and culturally rich place that Key West was and is, and what we hope we can retain.
Right, because through your book you can get off the Duval Street, which is the main drag where all the bars are and the junk shops, the junky shops, whatever you want to call them, trinket shops.
It is our Bourbon Street, I suppose, and we embrace it, but we don't end our tour there. That's what many people think of Key West is just Duval Street. We have the first chapter, Duval and Downtown Crawling, because the famous thing to do is do the Duval Crawl, which means basically go to a bar, drink a beer, and go to another bar, and drink a beer, and go to another bar, and drink a beer, or Bloody Mary, or whatever you're going to drink. And that's the crawl. Well, there's food that goes along with that, too, and that's fun, but we also want to show people how to cook the foods that were so
rich. So take us off of Duval Street. Where would we go if we wanted to go to get some good food or to see what's going on, to see the scene?
Well,
would it be the Bahama Village, or where would it be?
Oh, Bahama Village is amazing now. And go to the Green Parrot Bar and just enjoy some music, live music at 5 or 6 o'clock. They don't serve any food except for one day a year, and they do their chicken and waffles brunch. Mm-hmm. And we have the chicken and waffles in our book.
And what day of the year is that?
Oh, my God. It is around Fats Navarro's birthday, whatever that is.
Okay.
You have to look it
all
up.
Right.
There's a dish that I've just been teaching as I've been doing some of the classes out of the book that people love, which is the caramelized plantain soup. And if people...
Oh, that sounds good.
Oh, my Lord.
How do you caramelize the plantains?
You just slice them into nice-sized pieces, put them in the pan. I use a combination of a blended oil and butter to bring up the sweetness, and then just kind of roast them, toast them over and over until they turn nice and dark and golden. The first ingredient that really just sent me across the river and made me a lover, a fan of these flavors, was the plantain. And I was in a Cuban restaurant in Duval Street in 71, and I don't even think it had a name on the outside of it, but they served caramelized plantains with the roast pork. And I first looked at it, and being a person from the Midwest, I thought, why are there bananas on my dinner plate? But then I tasted them with a squeeze of lime and a little bit of onion that had sort of like been next to it.
So you're talking about this caramelized plantain soup?
And that caramelized plantain flavor got embedded in my mind then in the early 70s. And so I have carried that over and done different things with it. But the caramelized plantain soup with smoked ham is one of the dishes that I have in the book that people have been saying, when are you going to put that on the menu at Tuyo?
Norman, I'm wondering how well Key West has been able to keep its sort of irreverent spirit over the years. I remember going there years ago, and they would have little windows in restaurants like Cuban coffee windows, except that they were selling plastic go cups with peppermint schnapps on ice, and you would buy one and just walk down the street. Does it still have that spirit?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it's almost ramped up. It's become more okay. I mean, if you remember that time, Fred, you may remember that it was illegal to be without a shirt if you were a man on Duval Street back in the day. You could not be more than a block from the beach. So there were rules in Key West back then that don't exist anymore today because...
I didn't know that.
Well, so, yeah, you can still get your drinks to go.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit more about the food in Key West. Of course, key lime pie. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the thing. Do you cook your key lime pie, or do you just leave it with the raw eggs?
Well, I don't think of them as raw eggs anymore. I don't know what happens in the tropic heat, but you do not cook the key lime pie.
Okay, there are many versions. So you have a version of it in your
absolutely,
book.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
the person who taught me to make this the very first time was a woman named Sunshine, who eventually became the business manager for a guy named Jimmy Buffett. So her recipe is not what we follow, but we certainly were inspired by.
There must be a website associated with the book that people can listen to or go visit.
With our book? It's my name. It's normanvanaken.com. So it's pretty simple.
That's easy.
Right. And the recipe's there. And mm-hmm. really, a key lime pie is simply real key limes.
Mm-hmm. What you need.
Yeah, because you need that pH to set that egg.
Yes, the pH, the scientific term for acidity. Yes. And the sweetened condensed milk, which I think that's a fascinating combination, the sweetness of that stuff, but cut with the acid of the key lime.
And graham crackers or what?
I like graham cracker crust.
Do you put a meringue on top?
I do not. Although, okay. I don't mind it. I just knock it off.
Okay. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Norman Van Aken about his new book, My Key West Kitchen. We'll take a short break here, and we'll be back with more. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Norman Van Aken. His latest book is My Key West Kitchen. He wrote it with his son, Justin Van Aken.
Is Justin a cook?
He is. He came up in the restaurant business with me.
All right.
But he'd rather be a writer than a cook, I think.
Like right. His father?
I like them both.
Okay, cool. All right, Fred Tasker, are we drinking today?
We are always drinking, and now I'm going to change the subject a little bit, actually. Christmas is approaching, so it's time to break out the holiday beers, of course.
The holiday
no
beer?
Kidding.
Like not wine?
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay.
Samuel Adams, the Boston brewery, has just released a Winter Classics variety pack of beers that are specially brewed to go with Christmas flavors. Some of these are kind of wild. First, there's the Sam Adams Winter Lager. Now, this is a Bock beer, which means it's a dark, rich beer with lots of malt and relatively little hop flavor, so it's kind of a sweet beer. And in this case, it's also laced with cinnamon and other spices to make a holiday brew. It's great with roast goose or turkey, and some people even drink it with fruitcake.
What does it taste like? A sweet beer?
Well, it's just moderately sweet. It's okay. Sweet in terms of it doesn't have a whole lot of hops in it. Then the hops give it the bitterness. So it's a spicy beer. You can taste all those spicy flavors.
Okay.
And then you have Sam Adams White Christmas Beer. Now, this is a lighter wheat beer without so much rich malty flavor. But it has even more cinnamon, nutmeg, and in this case, orange peel to give it a spicy flavor. And this is good with lighter dishes like seafood or mushroom risotto or something like that. Then my favorite is Sam Adams Old Fezziwig Ale. If you remember
Fezziwig?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you remember your Dickens, Old Fezziwig was the happy, genial, original boss of Ebenezer Scrooge, who obviously didn't pass on those characteristics to Mr. Scrooge. But anyway, this is a deeper, darker beer with cinnamon, orange peel, and yet another spice, ginger. So it's a perfect match for gingerbread cookies. Well, I would drink that with a steak, too. It's a good steak wine.
Okay.
Finally, you have Sam Adams Chocolate Bock, which is a dark beer with big flavors of malt and chocolate. They actually add chocolate to it. They roast the malt very dark, and then they add chocolate nibs, which are N-I-B-S, which are the meat of the cocoa bean that's used in making chocolate. And I did a tasting once in which I dropped a scoop of Reese's peanut butter ice cream in this and had an adult beer float. It was just absolutely fabulous. Although not everybody liked it, I have to admit. And you can buy these beers in most major liquor stores. And
so these are going to be available all over, easy to find?
Yeah, widely available, not every place, but mm-hmm. widely available. It's the Winter Classics. You get a 12-pack for only $13.99, so it's a pretty good deal.
All right.
And enough. I promise to get back to wine next week.
All right. I thought you might. And this was a sort of a type of bubbly for you, would you say? Would you say?
Oh, sure. Okay. Put it in a tall flute and watch the bubbles rise.
All right. Okay, now it's Dinner in Minutes time. And today's Dinner in Minutes you can whip up in minutes, and it's especially easy for this holiday season. It's tuna penne pasta. So if you keep these ingredients on hand, you don't even have to go into the supermarket during these busy times. Just have some canned tuna, some pasta, any pasta you can use, canned tomatoes, some garlic. If you have some olives, that'd be great, Parmesan cheese. And if you happen to have some fresh basil, that would add it to it too. So you just cook the pasta in the boiling water. And then
what kind of olives do you use?
Any kind that you have available. How about some black olives?
Sounds good
to
me.
Would you like that? Or,
yeah.
You know, whatever I have in the refrigerator is what I use because it's just easy to whip up this meal in minutes and then you don't have to go to the store. So you mix the tomatoes. I put a little tomato paste in, garlic, some tuna. You mix it all together in the food processor and just put it in a bowl and add the olives and basil if you have it. Then you drain the pasta and just put it in, and it warms the sauce. The sauce cooks in the hot pasta. That's it. Just open a bag of ready-to-eat lettuce. Little salad dressing, and you're good to go. That dinner and the photograph is at dinnerinminutes.com, and please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Fred, are you doing Twitter these days?
No, I'm not these days, no. I'm just doing the radio show and my weekly column in the Herald.
All right. Well, Can they contact you at fredwine.com, something like that?
Yeah, you'll see it at the bottom of my column in the Herald. It's fredtaskerwine.com.
All right.
fredtaskerwine@gmail.com.
Gmail.com. Okay, if they have any questions. Let's go back to Norman. And you moved from Key West to Miami. You've been in several venues here, but you're in a really beautiful venue at the moment. Tell us about it.
That's right. Dr. Padron, the president of Miami-Dade College, a few years ago, three or four, conceived of the notion of including a culinary school along with all the other opportunities for education at Miami-Dade College. And that set about a whole bunch of different things in motion, including the school, Miami Culinary Institute. And
that's a seven-story building. It's an amazing building.
Mm-hmm. Well, eight when you count Tuyo, because that's where we are, with the dining room on the eighth floor. But just over a year ago, we opened up Tuyo, and it's open for dinner Tuesdays through Saturdays, 6 o'clock on. And it's an amazing look at the city of Miami. It's a place that you can go to eat and dine, of course, but the your mindset that you'll get from looking out that window over Freedom Tower and Biscayne Bay is second to none.
There's a whole restaurant on the top floor there, is all windows. Magnificent scenes of the whole city, really.
Many people that are from here say, I don't feel like I'm in Manhattan. I feel like I'm in Manhattan, not Miami, when they come to dine with us there. So I love that. And I love the fact that I was able to put together many of the members of my original Norman's team and present the food like we did at Norman's at Coral Gables all those many years.
So Tuyo, what does that mean? That's T-U-Y-O. What kind of name is that?
Spanish for a gift for you, almost like tu and you is how it works, Tuyo. And Dr. Padron had the students enter a contest to choose the name, and we received many, many, many names. Tuyo won.
All right. So now how did you make it from Key West up to Miami? What happened there?
Well, I reached a point around 1988. I'd written A Feast of Sunlight, my first cookbook. But I'd reached a point where I thought I could not go any further on the island doing what I needed to do as a chef, which was to continue to explore the most creative edges. And I needed a larger population that would support that economically. And so I came up to the mainland and took over on Ocean Drive at the Betsy Ross Hotel and opened a place called Amano. And it was...
you were up in Boca, I think, before.
I was in Boca first, and then came to the beach. And it was there at the Betsy Ross at Amano that I met the people that would become my first investors and help me create my own restaurant, which was Norman's, which we operated for almost 14 years there at Coral Gables.
Mm-hmm. Great. And now Justin's cooking, your son Justin, who you wrote the book with, is cooking in Key West. Mm-hmm. So where is he cooking?
Right now we're on tour. He's basically bouncing back and forth, helping me organize the book tour. So once he gets done with that, he and his wife Lourdes, what I hear the most about is they want to create a line of baby food. They're brand new parents, and I'm a brand new grandfather.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
It's gourmet baby food.
Well, I'm not sure it'd be gourmet, but it'll certainly be seasonal and fresh and local and all those good things.
Key lime baby food? Key lime pie baby food?
Oh, yes. By the way, the key lime pie does bake for 10 minutes, just so you know.
Truth be told?
You know, I gotta tell you the truth. It's a habit of mine.
All right. Well, Norman Van Aken, thank you so much for joining us.
We're already done. I have to go back to work now.
Just about. Yeah,
okay. Yeah, just about done. Fred Tasker, are you still here with us?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, great advice as always.
Always a pleasure.
I hope that you will get us back to some wine and maybe some bubbly coming up holiday season. What do you think?
Oh, we always do bubbly for the New Year's.
And Joe Cooper, did you enjoy your dinner today?
I certainly did. Yes.
I didn't even get to ask you about it.
It was good.
We were going on with Norman. Well, I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and join me next week for more food news and views.
We'll be back to close in a moment.
Okay.
Thanks for tuning in this afternoon. Our producer is Richard Ives, with technical direction from Michael Stock. Paul Leary is online producer. Again, we exhort you to support the regional and local programming on the station. Make a call to 1-866-247-9576 or go to WLRNradio.org. Tomorrow at 1, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we discuss the CIA, U.S. military, and its historical impact on Haiti. And today's calendar, on this day in 1922, 90 years ago, the birth of blue comedian Red Fox, original last name Sanford, born in St. Louis. Fred Sanford was a brother. Red played the washboard in a Chicago band and was an early acquaintance of Malcolm X in the 40s, who dubbed him the world's funniest dishwasher. And on this day in 1956, 56 years ago, the Dodgers trade Jackie Robinson to the Giants for Dick Littlefield and $35,000. Robinson chooses to retire instead. And one more while we remember the killing fields. On this day in 1953, 59 years ago, the birth of John Malkovich in Christopher, Illinois. Malkovich lost millions in the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scam. Support regional and local programming on the station. So we leave with a thought from Red Fox, who died from a heart attack in 1991. Quote, "The food here is so tasteless, you could eat a meal of it and burp, and it wouldn't remind you of anything." I'm coming to join you. This is Joseph Cooper. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned now for the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.